You said that you think that I'm a
net negative
or leave a bad impression on the property industry.
I'm not necessarily the eyes of your average viewer, right? And I'm looking at it thinking, I mean, that's incredibly clever marketing, but you can't be chainsawing people's doors.
Being successful in property, having a property business and having tenants and having staff, it's really hard. But you know what's also hard? Having a job.
That's interesting because I've never heard you say that. There's a prescriptive formula that people follow. Someone's going to run to the back of the room. The price is only this for today. So where does the line exist?
If you're on booking.com and it says 2 rooms left, that's not pressure selling. It might be creating urgency, but if it's not true and it's a lie, then we have a problem because now it's dishonest.
At the level that you're at, the level of influence that you're at, it comes with a level of responsibility.
I've got my fair share of critics. People call me out online, say I don't know what I'm talking about, I'm full of nonsense, I'm unethical, all kinds of stuff. So I recently put a post up and challenged people to come and debate me live in person. And there was one guy called Adam Lawrence who filled out the form. He said that I prey on vulnerable people, I don't know what I'm talking about, I'm immoral and I'm unethical. And he disagrees with how I run my training company. And then he made a post on social media and said, yes, I filled in the form. No, it won't be happening because there's zero chance of picking someone who could utterly take him apart. Stick with the softies and actors, Samuel Leeds. This guy's Adam Lawrence. He owns a lot of property. He's been in the industry quite a long time. I'm looking forward to the debate. Let's see what happens. This will be put in full. There'll be no edits. There'll be no cuts. A full, live and raw debate. So we're here for a debate, a discussion to thrash out... three things. Number one was the engineered stunts and marketing of however my business. Number two was preying on vulnerable people, which is something that you said that you believe that I do, which I disagree with. So we can thrash it out. And the third one was just in the industry generally, you said that you think that I'm a net negative or leave a bad impression on the property industry. So we've not met before, I don't believe.
Well, very briefly, but it was many years ago.
What year was that?
Oh, I want to say about 2016. Maybe sure. You presented at a meeting in Warwickshire.
What did you think when you saw me?
You were talking at the time about HMOs, yeah. And every property in the country could be an HMO. And I thought, I'm not sure how old you were at the time, but you were young.
Yeah, young, you probably mid-20s.
And I thought you had a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
I thought you were quite high level, didn't necessarily get into a lot of the detail around it. And I think probably I'm quite boring and quite risk averse. And at the time, we were getting into a situation where more and more regulations were coming into the property industry. And I was thinking, I'm not sure all the regs and things are at the top of what you were thinking about, really. But overall, sure. I thought anybody who's as young as you were at the time is happy to have a go. I thought fair play to you, really.
Yeah, and I was at the time, if it was 2016, I was running a HMO management company. Right. Had a portfolio of HMOs myself in around the Birmingham area. And but I don't remember the talk. It was a long time ago. So
I think it was one of your first ones. Certainly, I think you said something around it being one of your first ones, I think.
But anyway, I appreciate you coming down. I think it's really healthy to have debates and conversations. A lot of people online, they'll say things online, but then if you get into a discussion, then they'll disappear off, or they'll speak with anonymous accounts. I've done a little bit of research into yourself. You've got a property portfolio. You've been in the game quite a long time. And if we disagree, that's healthy. We can thrash it out. We can talk. I'm open. I'm not here to try and win the debate. I'm here to hear feedback, but of course I'll defend myself. So which point did you want to start with? What do you feel is what's the biggest thing that you're kind of, you think you disagree with me on?
I think the thing is the stunts and all the rest of it and the perception on the industry is probably the one thing I thought I'd like to come and talk to you about.
Let's do it.
Because I think we all probably know most people hate landlords anyway. So we sort of start from a difficult place.
Yeah.
And we've also had a pretty difficult time over the last sort of 10 years. And then we've got renters' rights bill and all the rest of it coming in at the moment. So anything that can put out a negative impression of landlords is, and the one that specifically sticks in my head is the chainsaw.
I know
chainsaw.
What you're going to say.
It's
I know,
the chainsaw, yeah. Right? And now I looked at that and I laughed, to be honest, because half of me quite strongly disagrees with a lot of what you say and how you position yourself. Half of me thinks your marketing's unbelievable and it's far, far better than pretty much anybody else in the property space. And I'm not necessarily the eyes of your average viewer, right?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it thinking, blimey, that's incredibly clever marketing, but you can't be chainsawing people's doors down. Oh, I know you weren't chainsawing someone's door down, really.
No, it was a stunt.
It's a stunt, right? Yeah. But I think the I don't know that the positives of that for you outweigh the negatives for the industry. Do you see what I mean?
I fully understand that. And it was something that, you know, when I did, and you can look at the good and look at the bad. I mean, the positive of the chainsaw stunt, and for anyone who doesn't know what the chainsaw stunt was, it was an out of context 20-second clip of me chainsawing a door down, and the media went mad with it and ran with it and also jumped to conclusions. And that was part of the point why I did it, because I wanted to actually show that I think that the media will always jump to attack landlords out of context, won't check the facts. No one checked the facts. They didn't write to me and message me and say, was there anybody in it? They just straight away, landlord evicts tenants with a chainsaw. And then I had the opportunity to speak on TV, and I was on GB News, and say, actually, look at how the media attacked me when they didn't have the evidence, they didn't have the facts, they didn't know. So that was my message, or at least that was part of it. And it did also, you know, it brought out a lot of dialogue between evictions. And so although you could say it was negative, and I get that, and I appreciate that, I think that you could argue it both ways, and it's somewhat subjective.
I think the problem is the world in which we live in today is about those 20-second clips, isn't it? And I don't know, you might know how many millions of people saw that clip or whatever.
Tens of millions, yeah.
Yeah, so we're up in the millions there. How many people then listened to the GB News bit? How many people got into the detail of it? And it'll be far lower numbers again. So you've got a snapshot, and people, I don't think it's right, but people do jump to conclusions in 2 seconds, 20 seconds when it happens. And so this is what I mean. You'll have lots of people at the top of that funnel, if you like. There's a lot of people who've seen a negative and then a few people. And like I said, I'm not saying, I think people should go and research what they see online and all the rest of it. But unfortunately, not everybody does. And the vast minority of people that do, isn't it?
So your argument is that people see that out of context and then think, oh, landlords are terrible. And it actually adds to the us and them divide between landlords
Absolutely,
and tenants.
Yeah.
Which I understand that. Let me ask you a question. You say, you said on your form, the constant engineered stunts. And that is a particularly controversial one. I mean, and I can see where you're coming from. Don't totally agree. I think there's a flip side to it. But what do you mean constant?
I guess in fairness, I don't necessarily watch enough of your stuff to, maybe I shouldn't use the word constant, but you do get the feeling of there's something you're trying to achieve. There's a story that you're telling with what you're doing.
Yeah.
With pretty much everything, it's well thought through.
Yeah.
Quite like everything you do today has been well thought through, right? So it's part of executing a marketing strategy. So like I say, I wonder what percentage of people who watch your channel actually understand that. And I think it could be quite a low percentage, really. So they're taking it at face value. And that probably leads into some of the other stuff we're going to talk about.
But the chainsaw stunt, though, that's quite a rare...
Yeah. okay, you're not walking around with chainsaws all the time. You're not like the Argentine Prime Minister.
No, it's quite a rare stunt. But generally speaking, I mean, I document what I do. I document what my students do. I do interviews. It's not constant engineered stunts.
So your point would be it's a small percentage of your content.
Very, very, very small.
But because it was so popular, it maybe feels bigger than it is, which is...
Yeah, it was a one-off event, which I don't even think was... I mean, if the worst thing that... And we're going to get onto a few of the other points, of course.
Wait till you do another crazy one and then I'll have to call you out. That's what's going to happen,
exactly.
Isn't it?
But also, it's just marketing, you know, and it's good marketing. So to have a problem... I mean, that's just... That's controversy sells and... I'm leading the marketing campaigns, and I think it's just good marketing. So,
well, like I said, I started from that position. So obviously, on that bit, we agree. I think it's just the where's the negatives. I'm big on. So, for example, big tech.
Yeah,
it's amazing. The internet's amazing. Smartphones are amazing. Use it badly, and then it's problematic. Kids have problems with smartphone addiction and all the rest of it. Do you know what I mean? So, I think. At the level that you're at the level of influence that you're at, it comes with a level of responsibility.
I agree with that. No, I agree with that. And I'd like to think, and this is why I like doing debates, because it gives you an opportunity to you know, think things through and double check yourself and say, could I do things better? I'm definitely not perfect. I'm always trying to improve. But I think that my marketing is authentic. A lot of people accuse me of using actors and my success stories. Oh, they're not written, all this. You've not said that, which is complete nonsense. Everything I do is authentic and real. I'm a good marketer. Maybe sometimes I'll slightly overstep the line, potentially. But I'd like to think that I'm a net positive, and I'd like to think that people do actually see the video and go, what the heck is this about? And then go and do a bit of research and use their brain and see the longer form content.
I think that's an interesting point, because I think you're the only person who knows whether you are a net positive or not, because you know how many people you've given free training to.
Yeah.
You know how many people have watched all your YouTube videos, for example. You know how many have paid for whatever levels of courses that they've done. And you probably know to an extent, not, I mean, you're not going to know everything, but how successful they've been or not.
Yeah.
So for me, because like, you know, I come from a trained economics background. So although everything shouldn't be about money, it often gets translated into money.
Mm-hmm.
So you would know how much your students have made or not versus how much they've paid.
I do. I see it every, we do awards nights. We do every month. We have dinners and I say to people, if you want to come and share on, in fact, I did a post about 3 weeks ago and said, if you've done the training academy, let me know below in the comments how it's going. Not one person went on and said, oh, it's really rubbish. It was flooded. There was probably about, I don't know exactly how many, but maybe 100 comments of people saying, I've left my job. I've just become I've set up a letting agency, which is doing six figures. It was just flooded with positivity. So
I get that, but I think there's also an element online in which people won't necessarily chip in there if everybody's doing well.
Yeah,
they
think,
I'm not doing this well. They just won't say anything.
No, that's true.
Which is
that's
why true. I say you'd have to look at your net.
Yeah,
your net in versus, and if you've taken 50 million quid and made people 500 million quid, I'm not going to argue you're a net negative, because you're not in that way.
And another thing is as well, and again, you know, not saying I'm perfect, not saying I train is perfect, but we obsess over our customers and the you know, we do surveys and stuff. We send out we just did one last week, and it's very positive. And if anyone is struggling or not getting results, we go to town, you know what I mean? We don't ignore them or think, oh, be quiet. We do the opposite. Every time, every week on the Monday Night Mastermind that I run with all my students, I say, if anyone's struggling, tell me now, share. Do you know what I mean? So, of course, not everybody's going to be successful, but I'd like to think that I'm a net positive in the community. But what was the other, preying on the vulnerable? Let's talk about that. That's an interesting one.
We're sort of bordering on that, aren't we, really?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I think, the thing is, you're in the wealth creation space, right? You would happily go along with that. That means people who are watching your content might be looking at other things like crypto and stuff like that. I'm not a big fan of that sort of stuff, because I don't think there's inherent value in it, right? So I think property is a better vehicle. And a friend of mine said to me the other day, he said, I love what Samuel does for the property industry. And I thought, that's interesting. Why? Because I wasn't expecting him to say that. And he said, it's because he draws people towards property who would otherwise would have gone to crypto or Forex or this or that. And then once they're in the space, he also sells training. Anybody who's selling training in the space is there to compete with the best marketeer or not. And I thought that, and that's interesting, because that's a real reframing that I hadn't considered about
that's,
it.
That's what I think about Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad. So many people come to my events and they say, oh, it was actually Robert Kiyosaki's book that got me into the world. So I'm like, oh, that's great. That's a net positive.
Yeah, I think at a very high level, I would agree with that, because the number of people I've met who've said that book changed their life and the way they think. But I've also known a number of people say they've done XYZ training, nothing to do with yours. Those people I know, I've met lots of... I'm in a space where a lot of people message me if they've had a bad experience,
mm-hmm.
because they see me as someone they can come to if they've had a... Or someone who can solve problems if they've got a problem.
Yeah.
Unfortunate reality is 90%+ of them, the problem's already so far down the track that the difficulties, they need to sort of wrap it up and walk away. So it's a bit too late, really, you know. But I do know some great people who've been through exactly the same training, right? But they have done it almost in spite of that rather than because of it. Do you see what I mean?
Right.
So it's difficult sometimes to measure on that basis. But I think you're also the wealth creation space, the get rich quick space.
Yeah.
You know, it is usually people. Again, how would I measure this? Because I'm boring and I like to measure stuff and evidence stuff rather than make it up. I would measure it by how many people who pay for one of your courses pay on a credit card, for example.
We know that data.
That's what I mean. So
we know that. We track all that.
And what percentage is that? And what percentage is therefore people who are vulnerable because they can't afford it versus, you know.
Now that's really interesting. And we actually track a lot of this stuff. So
would you share it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm quite open and transparent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm quite open and transparent.
That's why I've come, because that was my expectation. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's compare it to university.
Okay.
So university.
This is going to be an interesting comparison because
yeah.
I know where we're going to go with this on university, and we're probably going to end up agreeing, I would imagine.
Maybe.
But let's
maybe.
See.
So university, only 5% of people that go to university can afford it, basically, and use their own money. 95% of them get it on credit, get it on loans. That's university.
Mm-hmm.
Our training programs, so 82% of people pay for our training with their savings and can afford it.
Wow.
And 18% use your credit card.
Yeah.
So even compared to university, it's
you'd
have
to consider credit card's going to be 30% interest and student loans 6-7%
maybe.
Interest.
And we tell people as well, if they are doing it on a credit card and we know, we'll say to them, hold on, what's the rate? And if it's silly, we'll tell them not to do it.
Right.
So it's actually quite low.
That is a lot lower than I think a lot of people would have expected.
Yeah, that was stats done from 2024.
Okay.
That was over that whole year.
Okay. Pretty good sample.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So preying on the vulnerable.
So I think people who are, you know, in a bit of a low in their life and things like that. So, for example, I was fortunate enough to attend a talk with Jordan Peterson a while ago, right? And I had this sort of funny idea in my head about what the audience... It was lots of people there. I don't know, 6,000-7,000, something like that. And I had this sort of funny idea in my head about what the audience was going to be like. And like it was going to be like brimming with intellectuals or strange thinkers and things like that. And it wasn't that at all. It was full of people who'd had loss or needed answers or things like that, which is a lot of what crosses over with religion. And there are obviously sort of similarities. And you probably address that or have that as part of your persona or you.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else who trains in property who really even talks about religion in any way, shape or form. So there is that sort of feeling of, which then leads to, is it like a cult?
Yeah.
You know, because there's a natural...
I'll tell you why I do that. Because it's an interesting backstory. So when I was, I don't know how old I was, but maybe about 19, 20, I was at a conference called Millionaire Mind Intensive, which is a 3-day conference at Ibis Hotel. There was about 700 people in the room. And the guy that was speaking, bear in mind I'm Christian and I was a new convert. The guy that was speaking, he kept quoting the Bible, but not crediting the Bible. So he'd say things like, you know, as a man think as, or you reap what you sow and things like that. And I was thinking, oh, that's from the Bible, but he wasn't saying it. And then at the end of the 3 days, there's been 700 people hanging on his every word. I went and spoke to him at the end. I got a minute with him and I said to him, are you a Christian? And he said, I am. And I actually judged him at the time. I thought, you've got 700 people and you didn't even say that you're a Christian. Are you ashamed or something? I didn't say that to him. That's what I was thinking.
On the basis that one of your roles as a Christian is to spread the word that it's positive. Yeah. It's a positive for you.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I kind of judged him. And as soon as I thought like, why did you not? I almost... And I believe it was the voice of God saying to me, well, when you're on stage with 700 people, then you can share. But don't judge him. He's doing him. You're doing you. And I just felt that. And then fast forward 10 years, I'm on stage, 700 people. So I feel like as a Christian, I'm not going to preach. I'm not going to tell people you're wrong if you don't believe what I believe. But I feel like I'm not perfect Christian. But to just let people know and be unashamed of my faith, I think it's important. And that's the reason I do it.
I think it's quite honest to say you sit and judge someone because I think everybody judges people in very short snippets of time and things like that. And, you know, to learn from it is creditable. But you are going to have people in the get-rich-quick space who are going to make very quick decisions, have sort of, you know...
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about selling maybe. Because I think you put on your form, can't remember, but something about... pressure selling, preying on vulnerable, that type of stuff.
There's sort of scarcity pieces and things like that, sure thing, yeah. There's obviously the little NLP bits in there. The price ends in a 7. It's this today. It's supposed to be this and it comes down to this price and things like that, which I think, to be fair, are all things that were probably covered in that the BBC programme.
Well, we can talk about it. And you can ask me anything. I don't want you to feel like hold back or you can grill me as much as you want because I've got nothing to hide. And if something is said and I'm like, oh, man, I didn't think about that, then I'll change it.
Yeah, so you know, everyone's got to have a way of selling things. And there is a way that has sort of, you know, preside. I've been around this sort of space, the networking side of things, since 2011, right? Mm-hmm. So nearly 15 years now. And... There's a prescriptive formula that people follow, which you, I think, have taken bits of and then got rid of some bits of and sort of done your own thing as well. But that does involve all of those, you know, techniques, as in someone's going to run to the back of the room, the price is only this for today, you've got to make a decision now, the volume goes up so you're shouting at people and all these other things.
Sure.
So where does the line exist between... Yeah. like we've already discussed the marketing side, now we're discussing the sales side, right?
Yeah.
So where does the line exist between where you, and I think, you know, everybody draws the line in different places. I've seen people do things, and I've also heard people say things, the same people, offline, and they've been very, very different from how they appear when they're on stage.
So, I know, I'll tell you exactly what I do, how it works.
Okay.
Tell me if you think it's right, if it's fair. I mean, for a start, where the line gets crossed, I think if you, this is kind of obvious, but if you lie, so if you say the price is this, but right now it's this, but actually it's not. If it's a false,
Never sold anything at that price, you mean?
Not just
example,
never sold. If you just don't, if it's a fake offering, if you're on booking.com and it says 2 rooms left, that's not pressure selling. That's just saying 2 rooms left. It might be creating urgency, but if it's not true and it's a lie, then we have a problem, because now it's dishonest. So I think that's a big part of it. And we don't lie. We don't say this is the, I mean, we do an offering at the Crash Course, and I do very passionately sell.
Sure.
But we don't mislead people or say that, you know, I mean, you can look at all of our prices on the website and people buy them individually. At the Crash Course, we do an offer, and I'll say, these are the programs that I'd recommend you look at, this. We do an offer. I sell it passionately. But I think also it's about, are you just as passionate about the delivery as you are about the sale? I think that's also important. If you're all focused on marketing and selling, and I've seen a lot of training companies do this, that they'll blow up and they're really good at marketing, they're really good at selling, but then after a year they disappear because they've got disgruntled customers, they're not getting results. Whereas I've spent 90% of my time on the training business delivering, and I think that you could ask our customers, I'm probably more passionate about delivering and offering support and mentorship and training than I am about the sale. And I think that's also, if you're selling passionately and then you're delivering passionately and you're not doing anything dishonest, I tell people at all my free events, this is going to be hard. It's tough. Everything's hard. I lost a lot of weight.
That's interesting, because I've never heard you say that. That is not something I've ever seen you say. But
that's part of it. My syntax at every Crash Course.
That's something I very much believe in myself. It is hard.
What I say is, it's hard being fat, because I used to be fat. But you know what's also hard? It's hard being slim. So you have to choose the hard. It's hard being...
I think it's easier to be fat, personally.
But, maybe.
Fair play for all the weight you've lost.
I was getting to the point, though, Adam, where... Yeah. I was having breathing difficulties in bed.
Right,
getting chapped legs. I was breaking chairs.
That's hard.
It's a different kind of hard.
Yeah, I see.
And it's hard being married. It's hard being single.
Sure.
It's hard having kids. It's hard not having kids.
Agreed.
I say this at every Crash Course. And then I say, and guess what? Being successful in property, having a property business and having tenants and having staff, it's pretty hard work. It's really hard. But you know what's also hard? Having a job. I've done both. I remember when I was working as an estate agent and I was working 6 days a week, and if I didn't answer the phone, if it rang 3 times, I'd get disciplinary.
Sure.
That was really hard.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, if I'm going to work hard anyway, I might as well work for myself and build a business. So I say, this is my exact words, every Crash Course, I say, this is not a guarantee. This is an opportunity. It's not a promise. It's a process. So I'm quite clear about the struggles, the difficulties. And of course, you might take a 30-second video on TikTok and say, oh, he makes it look too easy, or fine. That's the marketing. That's the short-form content. Come and explore. And I think when people watch the long-form content, see Winners on a Wednesday, where I interview my success students, I'll often say, what was the biggest struggles? What was the challenges? What was the hardships? So I think, personally, it's quite weak when people say that. I can see why they might say it based on a few TikTok videos, but I'm pretty genuine and authentic. And also, it wouldn't make sense for me as if you're a letting agent, if I contact a HMO management company and say, what area works best? Will this work? If they say to me, oh, that'd be great, just to get the business. Now they're going to have a property that's really difficult and they're going to struggle to manage it and it's going to be a pain. In the same way, if I say to people, yeah, it's going to be really easy, I'm not going to have a student that's hard to work with.
Yeah.
So setting expectations in business is really important. And I think that's something we do reasonably well. So
in terms of people who are successful after, let's say 12 months of training or whatever, you must know the figures. Well, first of all, I suppose, how do you define that they've been successful?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, it's difficult. you know, people sometimes say to me, you know, what percentage of people are successful when they come to this course or that course or the crash course? And of course, it's very difficult to track, because if someone comes to a crash course, sometimes people stop me in the street and they go, I went to your crash course 4 years ago. I've now got 10 houses. They're not on our...
They're not on your radar.
No,
anymore.
We don't
know. But you
know.
Could reach out to them. I mean, you could measure it. I went to again, I think it's something that doesn't really exist in the space. And I was at quite a big event before Christmas. And I was very impressed with the fact they had measured it. They'd taken 25% of the people who were in their community.
Yeah.
And they said, how many deals have you done this
year?
We do that. I thought, that gives you a good idea of, and you know,
I can share
someone
some
might have done 200 deals. Someone might have done. So what sort
I can
of
share some stats.
What sort of percentage looks good
as
a success rate
in
your eyes?
Yeah, we do track stuff. I'm mad into tracking data.
Yeah.
So at our last academy graduation, which was when they finished the 12-month program and have gone through all the training, we did a survey with everybody from that batch, which was about a month ago.
How many people would that be, roughly?
About 30.
Okay.
Yeah, because we take people on in batches, and we track this every month.
Yeah.
But it's generally pretty consistent. So that was, do you remember the percentage, the 2,000 or more? 86% were making £2,000 or more.
Per month that they weren't making before they started.
Correct. Now, some of them were making 10, 15.
Sure.
You know, and the ones that weren't, because some people say, well, what about the 14%? They were really happy. It might be that they're doing a slower strategy, because it can take a year and a half to get one. If you're doing buy, refurbish, refinance, that they might have not been making money, but they're still doing stuff. Or they're happy, or they say, oh, you know what, I've made some friends, I've grown personally, but 86%, £2,000 a month or more. And that, to be honest, that's a stat that I'm very proud of.
Yeah, and I
don't
understand.
Think anyone can compete with that. I think
people could compete with it, but probably not on the scale at which you're doing it, and which is the difference. But I think, I mean, that is an impressive stat, you know. But I think you could go and find out, you know, years down the line if you wanted to.
Well,
and
we just sent last week.
Where I'm coming from is I've seen people over the years say to me, because I've bought a lot of property.
Yeah.
How did you do it? What training did you do?
Yeah.
And I've said to them, I didn't do any. So when I came into the space, I would go to the networking meetings like the one you presented at and found my feet. And it took me a while to do that and find the people that I wanted to work with.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, I knew about the sales and marketing techniques that I was talking about earlier.
Sure.
And it put me off. Yeah. And it actually,
I get that.
The first time I bought a bit of training off someone, which was, I decided at a point I needed a letting agency.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure whether to start one or buy one or whatever.
Yeah.
Who was training in the space? Do you mind if I say anyone? Right.
No.
So Sally Lawson, who was ex-Parler president, right?
Yeah,
she's not from far away back home, right? We're all relatively geographically close to each other. She just started training and she did exactly the same sort of scarcity and music and all the rest of it. And I went up to her afterwards, because throughout the whole day that I'd seen, I thought, this is brilliant. I definitely want to buy this.
Mm.
And I had literally had to have my fingers in my ears for that sell bit,
right?
So I was like, I'm gonna now have to be, and got past my own blocker in my mind, which is like, someone using those techniques must be a bad person,
right?
Which I was wrong about, really. They've just been taught that way, right?
Mm.
And they've decided not to do it any other way,
right?
Which I think there are other ways of doing it. And when you go to sort of massive company levels and massive training company levels, they don't sell that way.
Yeah,
they sell. You know, they sell by reputation, and they sell by educational value.
Yeah,
you know?
That's interesting.
And I got a load of value off what I bought from Sally. It was phenomenal.
So you think some people throw the baby out of the bathwater because
I know that I did. So what percentage of people that applies to? I don't know, but they definitely will.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, in terms of selling, the day that I deliver is a very long day of value. And the sale might be about 20 minutes. And before I sell as well, I tell people I'm going to.
I'll
say, hey, would it be right if I talk a little bit about some of the advanced training? Do my sale, convert about 10% of the room.
Right.
Obviously, it
must be a pretty good conversion rate,
isn't it?
I would have thought.
Because
they've come for, they still come
a pound.
For a pound. They've come for a pound.
For a pound. But another thing as well is, and again, this is why it kind of irritates me when people talk about you prey on people, or you even impulse buying. I think it's the opposite of impulse buying, because it's like, I'm talking with them on Instagram, I'm sending them YouTube videos, they're watching me for weeks and weeks and months, and I'll offer free value, and then offer them try before you buy, doing a full day with them, me personally. It's not like when I started and I'd go to these 2-hour sales presentation evenings, I'm actually giving them a lot of value. They hear me on the phone to agents. They see what I'm doing. I'll answer questions and then I'll get their permission and do a 20-minute sale. It seems to me
quite... Well, I suppose the way, then presumably there still has to be calling off periods and all the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really get people as well. That's another interesting point.
Because that would be what I was going to say. You could measure that again, couldn't you? I know I keep banging on about stats and data.
Well, I love it.
I'm a nerd, right?
Yeah, so that's what I do. So. It's great. And you can't improve unless you look at the data.
Sure.
We don't really get very few refund requests. It's around 2% of people ask for a refund. And yeah, if they ask for a refund after they've bought and the next day, they're like, oh, of course, we'll give them a refund. Also, if they're really struggling, so if someone's got mental health issues or even if they're 6 months into the program, you know, we'll either offer them the support or we'll give them a refund or a part refund. We're quite a compassionate company. And I think that's why we're thriving. And I get what you mean about the sales. I do a passionate sale. It might not be everybody's cup of tea.
Well, I think you believe in what you do, which seems to be what comes across to me more from doing this.
Yeah.
And then you are going to be passionate.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you were not being genuine in that, it would be the most tiring thing I could imagine to be somebody different.
And I've got a portfolio myself. I know you've got a portfolio. I was a property investor. And I think this is another thing. I mean, I'm a trainer. My training business lost money for the first 4 years.
Right.
Which is, people might not even believe that.
No, look, new businesses often lose money before they get big. I mean, you must have taken a big bite out of the space because I was thinking about it on the way down here. I was thinking, well, I don't know how many years ago you started doing that properly, but there was really only one or two providers in the space. Now there's four or five decent sized ones, which looking from the outside without knowing the market data, I assume you're the biggest.
I think we are. Yeah, and I think we, I mean, the support, because the thing is, a lot of the time you've got small training companies and that's fine. And they often use their USP as, we don't have more than 20 people in a room because we don't believe in that. It's unethical. It's like, no, you can't get more than 20 people in the room. Let's be real. you know, use it as a USP.
That's just good marketing, right? If you've only got a small business, you've got to work with what you got in front of you.
It is, although it can backfire, because if it works, now suddenly you've lost your USP.
That's fair.
Right? Yeah. And a lot of the smaller companies that might be, you know, one or two people running it, if they're on holiday, I mean, I had this when I'd sell someone a 12-month mentorship and now I'm their mentor, but then after 6 months, I want to go on holiday for a couple of weeks. I can't. My phone's constantly going.
Sure.
I became financially free in property just to become a slave to set up a training business.
Yep.
And it's difficult.
So how do you handle that now?
Well, now we've got 12 millionaire mentors and me. So if you're an academy member and you want to book a mentoring call, you can. We just pass the bat on to each other.
There's latency,
Yeah. And we've got solicitors, accountants, lawyers. We offer unlimited. And this is another thing. I do believe strongly that if you're selling a course for thousands of pounds, you need to... I know there's people out there who sell £1,000 course, an online course, and it's just a bunch of videos. And it's like, okay.
I've heard you say yourself that, you know, your YouTube channel has got everything on there in terms of the knowledge, but people won't necessarily do the doing without the...
Yeah, I mean...
A little bit of the stick, but you know what I mean? The guidance, whatever.
You could argue that everything's online for free and... If you want to learn something.
I'm pretty sure I've heard you say it yourself. Pretty sure I got that from you.
Well, there's truth in that. If you want to learn something, you can chat GBT. Not everything. If you try chat GBT.
That's what I meant, your own channel, you see, because there's obviously so much content on there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good content there. But I think that it's night and day. It's like learning to drive or learning to box or learning to... You can't really... If you were getting on a plane and the pilot said, I watched a lot of YouTube videos, you're going to be just fine. You wouldn't put your life in the hands of that pilot.
No.
And in the same way, if you're putting your life savings into a deal that somebody's found, you want to know that that person's properly been trained, that they've got, you know, they've got solicitors, accountants around them that can vet their deals and look at them. And that's what we do. We vet everybody's deal. If they're looking to buy something, I tell everybody, don't buy a deal unless you've passed it to us first. Let us look at the blind spots. You know, the support is immense. It's not for everybody. Can you become successful in property without going on training programs? You're proof that you can. You never went on training programs, but then you could argue that you went to Oxford University. You're you know,
there's an inherent advantage in that. You would say
you went to Oxford. You know, I think was your dad in...
He was an accountant, but he became a tax and trust specialist. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And did he help you a little bit?
Or no, I've had no...
He didn't loan you money?
I started... No, never loaned me any money, but I started from no money, but lots of education, ultimately, which was not nothing.
Yeah.
So, it's fair to say.
So, you know, you can do it. Would it be easier? Would you have benefited from the academy, from the networking alone? I would probably say yes.
So
I'll probably
I've said to a lot of people over the years when they ask me that question in terms of what have you done, I've said I didn't do anything, but it took me a few years to even, and then it was more sort of specific targeted stuff.
Yeah,
is that ultimately, because they normally look at me with a bit of a sad face, to be honest, because they've just spent 10 grand, 25 grand, whatever on a course.
Yeah.
And I say, well, just think what you'll always have at the end is the network, right? Because some of these networks of those cohorts do stay together for years and years, and they do have obviously they have a value.
Yeah, and that's another thing as well with the 25 grand thing. The maximum you can spend, if you said to me, I want to do all your advanced mentorships, and also a lot of the training companies, they've got hidden upsells.
Sure.
So, but I don't think that's ethical. I personally think, and it's not illegal, so if you want to do that, that's fine, but I personally think all your programs, all your mentorships, the most advanced stuff should be on your website with a price list. That's what I believe. And if you did everything, all the mentorships, all our training, it would be £12,000. And there's no upsell. There's no additional, oh, well, if you want to come to my house and learn from me personally, then it's 25. But no, it's included. Everything's included. So
after 12 months, do you chuck them out or can they stay for another 12 months and do another £12,000 worth?
After 12 months.
Or I'm assuming it is 12 months, sorry.
Yeah, it is. So 12 months, 12 grand, and that's mentoring, coaching, support, all the training, all of our programs, everything. And then after the 12 months, if they want to rejoin, they can do, but because they already did it and they've done all the training and they've come to all the, it's £1,995.
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of people do reinvent stuff a bit the same way, you know, washing powder will say, well, it's new Daz today.
Yeah.
And they've done that for as long as there's ever been TV ads about washing powder. So they just do the same. I think they do the same thing, repurpose their content or chop and change a little bit, give it a new name.
Well,
something changes in the
market. No, we don't give it a new name. We just...
No, I'm not suggesting that you are, but just, I'm saying what you were saying about what's unethical if people have hidden...
Oh, hidden. Yeah. No, we've had the Academy since, I think, 2017. Not changed the name. We've just made it better. And again, because of things like this, because I love debating people and I love hearing feedback, for me, I'll take it. I'm all about feedback. So
how have you made it better since 2017?
Great question. For a start, we ask the Academy members what they want and then we give it to them. So since 2017, oh my goodness, we've now got a property investors mediation service. So if you sell a deal and it goes a bit sour, we've got a team of mediators and also lawyers that will come in, will investigate, will mediate, and then will adjudicate. So it keeps it kind of safe.
You said it was this and it was actually this sort of thing.
Yeah. So let's say you're on the Academy and you sell a deal to somebody and it goes a bit sour. We've got a team that will step in, investigate and sort it out. So it keeps it safe. We've got Rate My Deal where you can upload deals. We've got Samuel Leeds Finance where I invest the profits that we make in the training company, I put it into a pot and invest it into the students' deals.
That's sort of equity.
So
can they get a mortgage and you'll give them the rest?
It's bridging.
Right, I see. Yeah. So you're doing the first charge instead of...
Yeah, we've also added people. So we've got now a full-time accountant. We've got a full-time builder. So if you look at a property and you're wondering how much it's going to cost for the refurb, you do a video, upload it on the app, and then we'll give you an estimate quote. He's full-time and just estimates quotes all day in the basement. We've got an app. We've got a social media platform called Samuel Social. We've got people wanted to, sometimes they said, I just want to get to know you, Samuel. You know, I want to hang. So every Sunday I invite people to come train with me at the gym, go to church. I open up my Sundays and all the Academy members are welcome.
Makes holidays hard.
What's that?
Makes holidays hard.
Well, if I'm on holiday, obviously it doesn't happen. Yeah. We have all of the training programs that we have, because I'm only one person. I'll be teaching and delivering the training, but then we've got mentor boxes. So if anyone is struggling or finds a deal and they want someone to look at it, rather than, put the hand up and open, they can ask me, but they can slip out, have a mentoring session anytime, as often as they want for all the training programs that we run, which are 4 days long. So just constantly listening. One recently was rate my phone call. So when people are calling agents and trying to get deals, and they're like, what am I saying wrong? They can record themselves, upload it, and I'll listen to it, right, and then give them feedback. We have masterminds, not just on a Monday. We have a Monday night mastermind, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, every day. We have things going on. We just last year started the Inner Circle. So we've got 25 meetings across the country where people can meet with people from their hometown, Scotland, Wales, all over the place. So it's just constant obsessing over the delivery of making it epic. Customer service, speed. We respond. The average response time is 37 minutes. And that's not just to Academy members, that's across the board. So I'm just obsessed with getting better, man. And I think that feedback, hearing criticisms, whether it be on sales, marketing, and then getting better is super important in business.
Well, I think it's the only way to get better. And if you look at the best companies in the world, ultimately, their customer satisfaction is through the roof.
Yeah.
From Aldi to Disney to whoever. I mean, that's a definitely documented fact. So if you went back, I don't know, a few years or over the years, have you then seen the success rate in your delivery change? Because obviously 86% is pretty exceptional, you know. So
yeah,
what's it been over the last 5 years? Do you know? And that's a
it's hovered around the 80s for the last few years. I couldn't give you a stat over the last 5 years, but it's high. Because we obsess over the delivery and the support. But I think as we've got better and we've grown and our infrastructure's become better, I definitely think that the success rate is higher. Because now people will join the academy and then the support's better. They'll be able to go to a local group. We've got over 1,000 members.
Yeah.
So it's a big...
As in currently live as we're speaking live, today. Yeah. So how many have been through the whole process in total these days by now?
I mean, we've had... not just the academy, but our students across the board, including even the £1 events.
Right.
It's over 50,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot, man.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And not everybody likes me. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. That's okay.
I think Stephen Bartlett says you've got to upset people sometimes. Or he said it in a better way than that. But
well, no. If some people might not particularly love me in the property industry, but often it's competitors that are a bit salty, to be perfectly honest. Not always, but it's like, if you look
That's
at...
That's why you have to box them occasionally,
yeah,
right?
Occasionally box them, you know, or dialogue, whatever it is. But yeah, I've got nothing to hide. I think I run a good business. Not perfect. Sometimes might slightly overstep the boundaries with marketing stunts.
Doesn't sound like I'm going to change your mind in stopping doing that either, to be honest.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how would we track that? You're a data guy. How would we track? Was the chainsaw stunt a net positive or net negative? I think it'd be very difficult to track.
Track the emojis on whatever apps.
Probably angry face. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
On that point.
But you're right about social. You know, you said controversy sells. I think you said earlier on, and that's social media is wired that way.
And also,
they've mapped everybody's brains and knows that that's what gets the clicks.
Yeah. And also, if you're not hated by people, you're probably not doing something right. Because the bottom line is, I'm not saying deliberately be hated. But if you're really good at something and you're dominating in the market space, look at Steve Jobs. The engineers hated him. They said, he's not a real engineer. He doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, well, he's changed the face of the planet. Nelson Mandela was locked in prison for being a terrorist and then ended up winning a Nobel Peace Prize, becoming the president of South Africa. Now we say he's a hero. Socrates... He teaching people about critical thinking at the time. He was killed by the government because he was causing trouble and being a nuisance. Now we study his philosophy. So if I piss a few people off in the industry and rustle for some feathers and upset people, I can live with that.
Sure.
The bottom line is, what do my customers think of me? What do my staff think of me? What do my family think of me? I'm not worried too much if people are salty or upset or throwing a bit of shade. It's not nice. I wish everybody liked me, but...
I can understand that. I've ultimately bought properties cheap and I'm a landlord. And some people, there's a percentage of the population that think people shouldn't own properties.
Yeah.
They should all be owned by the government or whatever.
People could accuse you of preying on the vulnerable in the same way that they accuse me of preying on the vulnerable.
If you bought stuff cheap, you know, but again, that's probably a perception thing because a lot of people think it might be Mrs. Miggins and she's 89 years old. Whereas really, vast majority of stuff that we buy, it's a landlord who hasn't declared it to HMRC, hasn't got their compliance in place, hasn't done the works, hasn't done all of these things. And that's why the property needs to trade fast.
Yeah.
And they want to get out, they want to cut the liability.
It's quick.
And also, you've got to bear in mind, a lot of people don't understand, when the best way, I think, to get discounted property is to buy fast.
Yeah.
But you've got to understand, there's a reason why the surveyors call it 180-day value. Because mm-hmm. that's what it takes. It takes 180 days to receive that value. If you want it in 45, 30, 7
yeah.
tomorrow,
yeah.
that's a different price for each one of those. Because the risk that the buyer's got to take, we've bought properties where there's rivers running underneath them that not disclosed and nobody could pick up. We've bought properties that all sorts of crazy things. People have broken in after, people have done this, people have done that. Every single story you could... Well, I'd say that. There's always a new story. There's every month there's a new story that you think you'd never seen before. But that's risk versus price. Yeah. But that's me treating it as an asset class. And like I said, there's a percentage of the population who don't even think morally it should be an asset class. So I get
that. Well, I need to check out some more of your content, man. And I'm interested in what you do. I don't know if there's any other
points. Did it send you to sleep?
Yeah, maybe. Probably not. I don't know if there any other points or questions or issues you wanted to address now.
I think we've done a pretty... I think there's quite a bit of other stuff that... we could talk about, but I'm mindful that you've got lots of other people to see today and all the rest of it. So,
well, Adam, appreciate you coming out and be in touch. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Good conversation. I think Samuel had answers for a lot of stuff that we talked about. I think he was well prepped. So enjoyed learning a bit more about him as well and what he thinks about his business. I would like him to think a bit more before some of the stunts that he pulls. As I said, that was the big thing for me in my debate topics that were chosen. Thinking about what public perception might be of property owners, landlords and all the rest of it. I think it's very healthy. I think it's very difficult to... he said, you know, he opened the interview by saying people quite often post things online and run away and anonymous accounts and all the rest of it. And I really don't like that stuff. So definitely always healthy to talk.